Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. I'll try to tell you what I want to start by saying what I don't know. And I'm not an electrical engineer, and I don't know everything there is to know about power transmission. What I do know a lot about is how the Forest Society feels about this particular project and how we came to feel that way. And so I can express a lot about that. There are any number of unanswered questions that I'll ask as part of this presentation, and I would encourage you to ask those of people who do know, the Northern Pass folks. Before I get started, I want to acknowledge that one of your state reps is here, Mr. Reagan, back in the back, and I think he should be congratulated for being here. Are there other elected officials here that I don't recognize? Yes, sir? Thank you for being here. If I'm not mistaken, they both voted yay on House Bill 648, which is the eminent domain bill. Any other elected officials here?
Senator Barnes.
Senator Barnes is here. Thanks for being here, Senator. And if you'd like to speak later, be happy to have turn the microphone over to you. That 648 bill I talked about a little bit is going over to the Senate, so Senator Barnes will get to wrestle with that one. Lucky him. Anyway, can we have the lights turned down a little bit? Can everybody hear me? A little better, a little closer to the mic like that? All right. Well, as Joyce knows, Joyce Elquarty, my colleague back there, holding the Forest Society bag. As she knows, I don't stand still very well, so I'll do my best here. The Northern Pass presents many, many unanswered questions still, and part of the Department of Energy environmental impact statement scoping hearings that you probably heard a lot about were meant to encourage the Department of Energy to figure out the answers to many of these questions. I'll go through some of those tonight. So first, what is Northern Pass? Well, it might be better for Northern Pass to answer that question. They have attempted to do so. They've met with select boards and other community groups up and down the 44 towns through which the project will go. They have a terrific website. You can go there and find out lots of information. Sometimes they don't have all the answers. I'm not sure that they've figured out all the answers themselves, but they are the best source for finding out what it is, but I'll try to summarize it briefly. It's a Northern Pass Transmission LLC is a company headquartered in Manchester that was created by Northeast Utilities and NSTAR. Northeast Utilities owns PSNH, so that's the connection to PSNH, our own power company here. Hydro-Quebec up in Canada is a project funder in that they are paying the money to build this proposed line if it were to be built. The project investment would be estimated now at $1.1 billion for 180 miles of new transmission lines in New Hampshire, which include 140 miles of high-voltage DC line from through Pittsburgh all the way down to Franklin. And there's a map up here and then a map back there that shows a little bit close-up of that, as well as 40 miles of AC line from Franklin to Deerfield. The idea is that the DC power, which as I understand it, travels better, you have less loss. Coming down from Canada will be converted to AC. In Canada, the AC power is a different frequency or something, so it can't be used directly in U.S. So it goes from Canadian AC to DC and then back to American AC in Franklin, and then from Franklin down to here in Deerfield, and from here into the grid, as we understand it, primarily for use in southern New England. Hang on, I'm going to take this mic off because I just can't stand still. All right. Some milestones. Back in September of 2009, FERC approved participant funding. That is, it's not being funded by the rate base. The ratepayers aren't being asked to pay for the building of these lines. That's been put out there as an advantage of this project. I'm not sure it is, but I'll say why later. And then, more recently in October, the announcement of the preferred corridor in Franklin as the site for the conversion statement, DC to AC. Going forward, there's regulatory reviews that will take over the next 3 years, land acquisition and major construction the next 2 years, with the possibility of being in service in 2015. That is a very aggressive schedule. I think Northern Pass itself would acknowledge that at this point that's probably unlikely to happen that fast, but that's how fast they would like it to happen. What is Hydro-Québec? Hydro-Québec has 36,000 megawatts of installed capacity, of which about 98% is hydropower. By comparison, ISO New England, that's the power network in, here in New England, their peak demand for the entire New England grid over the past 5 years at any one time was 28,000 megawatts. Hydro-Québec has flooded about 7 million acres to create this electricity, and New Hampshire is about 5.8 million, so they've flooded an area greater than the size of New Hampshire in order to generate this hydropower. In 2008, 8% of Hydro-Québec's electricity was exported, and this accounted for about 22% of their net income. So it's a good deal for Hydro-Québec. They get to export it to America and make money on it. And their goal is to export 12%. This comes from their own business plan. They're quite clever. It's no secret. If they can export 12% of the power they produce by 2013, they can generate 38% of their net income. Great news for Hydro-Québec consumers, Quebecois consumers of electricity. Hydro-Québec has assets of more than $60 billion, so putting a $1.1 billion investment into building a new corridor down through New Hampshire is not beyond their means. Here's a picture of one of the facilities. Just so you know, it's not a dam that they throw across a river and you know have a little thing spinning to generate a little power. It's a big deal. Whether or not you think that's a good idea or not is another question. But it's a lot of earth moving, a lot of flooding in order to get this hydro. This is one of the turbines, and you can see the men here working to give you a sense of the size. This is a map that we created, just to be clear, that shows the proposed route crossing in Pittsburgh, coming down through Franklin to Deerfield. That's what shows up in orange on here. This is an existing high voltage DC line that goes from the same place in Canada down to Ayers, Mass. That line is owned by National Grid. This is just a close-up of that same map showing how it comes down the existing AC corridor, that orange line, through Concord and over to Deerfield. This is Northern Pass's own map, and that's the one that's back there at the table in the back of the room, showing more detail about where they plan to go through through Deerfield itself. I think it's important to point out, though, too, this, I'm just backtracking here. There's Deerfield. If you backtrack towards Concord, you can see where it crosses the Deerfield line, goes up through the northern part of Bear Brook State Park, up through Pembroke. Loudon, Chichester, Pittsfield. The blue line is the alternate route. If they can't use the existing AC corridor, really if they can't get around the airport in Concord, and there's some issues with the height of the towers related to the FAA regulations for planes taking off and landing, if they can't get that, their alternate route is the blue line, which is all brand new corridor. So when you think about whether the new corridor being all up north, it's not necessarily true. It could be right here in central New Hampshire. And here is the Deerfield portion, the Northwood portion of the alternate route, this blue line dropping down, cross Route 4, dropping down in the northeast corner of Deerfield. All new line, alternate route. And this is, again, the orange is their preferred route, the existing AC line, and the blue is the alternate route.
I was looking at the Northern Pass website today, their own website today, because I was curious. I thought somebody might be interested and say, well, how high are the towers going to be here in Deerfield? And I thought, well, they must have some indication. Well, they do say. They say it very clearly that the towers won't be as high up north as they are here. That, in fact, as a consequence of the existing line being placed, the average height here will be about 110 feet. Whereas up north, it might be more in the 80 to 90 feet range, with occasional bursts up to 135 feet to cross certain topography and so forth. Here it will be above the existing line and therefore 110 feet. All right, big picture issues. Why do we care about this? From the Forest Society's standpoint, anyway. One issue is private gain versus public benefit. And I'll go into a little bit more detail of these in a second. Another issue is the energy and consumer issues. There are economic issues on the plus and minus side. Environmental issues, ecological impacts on forests and lands, and impacts on scenic landscapes. We, as a Forest Society, think that visual blight matters, among other things. Our primary concern, however, the thing that made us leap into this, is that the new corridor will undoubtedly impact some existing conservation land. We don't know exactly where yet. We haven't analyzed how it will impact it yet, but we have a legal and ethical obligation to protect existing conserved land. So, private gain or public benefit. This is a merchant project. It's not like utilities said, geez, we're running out of power. We better go get some more. This is a power company instead saying, we are a private business. We are in the business of selling power. We need to sell more power. We want to do so competitively. If we could get our own line from Hydro-Québec down in New England, we could compete with other power sellers, and that would be good. It would be potentially good for the consumer. More supply drives down prices, potentially. No guarantee of that, but potentially. But the point of that is that it's not necessarily determined by public benefit. Right? This isn't. No one has determined that the region needs this power, and this is why the eminent domain bill is such an interesting a case. This project would almost certainly require the use of eminent domain to complete the project as proposed. If you went to any of the scoping hearings up north, it's pretty clear that any number of people up there will simply not let this happen. Until, as one guy testified, said, until the final court order. There were a few over my dead bodies too, but it's very realistic that it will be until the final court order. What's interesting about the opposition is that it crosses all political boundaries, it crosses all economic boundaries. Rich folks, poor folks, conservative folks, liberal folks, Republican folks, Democrat folks, Tea Party folks, it doesn't matter. People are very opposed to this. I think it's going to be very difficult to accomplish it without eminent domain, which is why some of the focus has been on the use of that eminent domain. So the question being, the big issue, should corporations who want to make money on selling power they can bring down here be granted eminent domain? That's a big issue and big question. Maybe you think they do, maybe you should think they don't. I'm not sure we're convinced that this project should be allowed to have eminent domain. Some energy questions. Is this a good investment of $1.1 billion? What else could you get for $1.1 billion? What if we decided as a region to invest $1.1 billion in energy conservation? The Forest Society has a long history of engaging in energy conservation. We have the Conservation Center. We use solar. We use passive and active solar. We burn wood for our heat. There's lots of ways that you can conserve energy. A $1.1 billion investment might reduce our demand by 1,200 megawatts. Would that be better? That would put a lot of people to work here to put that conservation into use. Who knows? Will Northern Pass crowd out other domestic renewables? This is cheap foreign power, and that's not me saying that. That's I pick those words, but Northern Pass is saying, look, the advantage of this is that, it's pretty inexpensive power. Okay, if you're a big user as a business, you'd like to have cheap power so you can compete on the global market. We understand that. That makes sense. But what happens to the other renewables that we're trying to create here? What happens to the people working at the biomass plants now who are having a difficult time competing, selling their energy? What happens to the wind projects? What happens to everything else? That's New Hampshire jobs and New Hampshire energy. I bring that up because this project has been put forward as great for New Hampshire jobs. And there's some questions about whether the net job number of jobs created will be positive or negative. It's a legitimate question. Will there be any real reduction in fossil fuel energy generation? Okay, we're going to bring all this renewable down. That means we can shut down, the coal-fired plant in Bow, right? No. Northern Pass has made it very clear. The Bow plant is the cleanest coal-burning plant in New England. It's not going away. So although it's being touted as a renewable project, renewable energy, that's good, right? There has been no proposed reduction of any fossil fuel burning to create electricity. We already figured out what happens when we have lots of cheap energy. When we had cheap oil, we drove a lot of miles and we drove big cars and we just burned as much as we could. Bringing a lot of cheap energy doesn't necessarily mean and translate into fewer fossil fuels used to generate electricity in this market. It would be nice if they guaranteed, this plant will be gone by 2025. None of that. Should we be concerned about over-reliance on Hydro-Quebec for electricity in northeastern U.S.? I don't know the answer to that. That's for people above me. Some people think relying on foreign powers for our energy needs is a bad idea. Some people think that the Canadians are friendly enough. It's no big deal. I don't know. It's a reasonable question to ask, though. Will consumers of electricity have any access to this power, right? So you probably heard, none of it's coming to New Hampshire anyway. Well, I'm going to guess sometime before too long, PSNH will announce that they've come out with a power purchase agreement or are close to signing a power purchase agreement that 10% of the power or something will come to New Hampshire. All right, well, we'd like some new renewable power, but what does that mean? Do we get a reduction in fossil fuel power? Do we get, or is that just going to knock out some of our existing renewables? What's going to happen? What does it mean for New Hampshire jobs? A reasonable question to ask. Economic questions. They've touted jobs. I think even they will admit that most of the jobs are temporary, the building of the thing. There will be some jobs in Franklin, I gather. Along with some tax benefits. There will be some added property tax revenues, $12 to $18 million a year. But the question then comes, what happens to those properties that are now next to a power line easement that weren't before? And what's their value? And how much of their taxes go down? And what abatements will they be coming to the selectmen for? And how does that all play out? I don't know the answer to that, but that's among the many questions that many people ask the Department of Energy to study as part of their environmental impact statement. Will the power actually provide a reduction and or greater stability in the price of consumers pay for electricity? I don't know the answer to that, but it's a good question to ask. One would think that it might be, if we're giving up something, and we are, dozens of miles of new corridor, we're giving up something, what are we getting back? Is it possible to quantify the economic values of New Hampshire's landscape that will be negatively impacted? Certainly the property value impacts that I mentioned. And up north, they will tell you, where there's a great deal of awareness of this, it is really hard to sell any property at all, whether it's $1 million home, a $6 million home, or a $100,000 camp, seasonal camp. You can't sell it. First of all, if you're anywhere in sight of or near the proposed route or an alternate route, you have to declare that. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen with this, so nobody wants to buy. And so what has happened to the market, and real estate agents have been telling us this again and again, essentially the market value of those properties is zero today because they can't sell. Well, I don't know how many people have figured out there's an alternate route through Deerfield and Northwood and so forth, but every property along there is going to face that same thing. There's going to be a requirement that there could be a power line in those. That's a real impact today on the very proposal. And I will bet that selectmen in those towns will get some abatements filed from people who are along those corridors today. And tourism impacts. There's been the suggestion that this new scar in the landscape will impact tourism. I don't know whether that's true or not, but it's a question that to be answered. What we heard, testimony at the hearings from many people, second homeowners, first homeowners, and so forth, that people come to New Hampshire to see the landscape, not to see the beginnings of the next New Jersey. I think there's some truth to that. Whether or not this would destroy our tourism economy is another question. I think there are some people who still like to go to Storyland, and they don't care if there's a power line on the other side of the state. But for where it goes, it's going to have some impact, certainly on the second home market. Environmental questions. The power is renewable. Okay, it's water going over the dam, water over the dam. That's renewable. Is the power green? I think that's a question that any number of groups, Conservation Law Foundation among them, are asking. You know, if you flood 7 million acres, what's going on there? Is that green? What happens to carbon? What happens to certain rare species? What happens to various wildlife habitat and so forth? Will it reduce New England's CO2 emissions by 5 million tons per year as claimed by Northern Pass? They've continually revised downward those estimations. And so I think we have maintained that it's good to ask that question because it may not in the end be all that much. Who decides whether the degradation of the New Hampshire landscape is acceptable trade-off for this conduit for power going south? Well, this is the issue that gets me wound up because there's no vote here, folks. There's no vote. You cannot go vote yes or no on this. There's a permitting process, and I'll go through that. So who gets to decide whether this trade-off is worthwhile? Well, the only way that you are able to do so is by making your voices heard and hoping that others hear you. Health issues. What are the human health issues? We heard a lot about that at the scoping hearings. I don't know the answer to that. That's not something the Forest Society is addressing directly, but others have many concerns about the health issues and have asked for studies about it, especially when it comes close to schools and homes and that kind of thing. Impacts on natural resources. There will be some impacts. It's hard to build over 1,000 towers across 180 miles without having some impacts on wetlands and other various natural resources. Are there alternatives for transmission of this power that have less negative environmental impacts? That's a big question for us. Okay, let's say that it might be a good thing 50 years from now for New England to have access to more renewable power of Quebec. Is this proposal the only way to do it? And that's where the Forest Society has come out. We have said that we oppose this proposal. We propose new corridor. We propose doing it the way they're doing it. Maybe there's another way they can do it that mitigates some of these other impacts. Impacts on forest lands and views. You know, people like to say that towers have babies. I don't know whether that's true necessarily, but here we're going, you have existing towers, there will be more towers. And the question becomes, well, once that's there, will there more towers after that? These towers are higher. There will be impact on your views and impact on the forest land. Many questions about, well, how do you keep these open corridors open? Do you do it mechanically? Do you spray? What are the impacts of that? Forest Society, I should say, is a forestry organization. We don't mind sustainable cutting of trees. We practice it on our own 50,000 acres. We think it's a good thing. We think forest landowners should practice sustainable forestry. It's good to use the wood resource. It puts people to work. Wood put into our houses stores carbon. Cutting our forests sustainably is healthy for the forest. It's not about not cutting trees. It's about the permanent opening of at least 45 new miles, if not substantially more, depending on the alternate routes. Oh, well, this is weird. Came out red. This is John Amy's farm up north. It's taken from our Washburn Family Forest, 2,100 acres, including 6 miles of frontage on the Upper Connecticut River we protected 3 or 4 years ago. The towers will go somewhere near this, north or south. Originally, we thought it might cut right through here, but it looks like they've tried to sneak it either north or south. It'll probably bisect the Washburn Family Forest. Again, that's the Forest Society. Look, we conserve this in part because it's the gateway to Pittsburgh, one of the great tourist destinations of New Hampshire, whether you're a snowmobile or a hiker or a boater or a fisher or whatever, fisherman. It's one of the wonderful, it's a bucket list kind of place up there, and this is the gateway, and the towers would come through that. We think it's worth protecting. This is the Snowmobile Trail 128 on Washburn Family Forest, and the preferred route would take the towers about 100 yards down this trail right across that view. This is our Rocks Estate, the view from our Rocks Estate over towards the Presidential Range. And you can see in the foreground, see the towers. It's probably a lot like what you have here in town. Is that right? It's about right? Yeah. So I don't know how much higher the towers will be carrying the DC line, but they will be up over the tree line. It could be a wider corridor here. But if it were built right through our Rocks Estate, which we operate as a Christmas tree farm, about 1,400 acres, will be new expanded corridor with higher towers. We think the visual blight matters, especially if it might be able to be, if it's not necessary to begin with, or if there's another way to do it, why should we put up with a visual blight? This is a picture I took, actually, of the existing National Grid HVDC line in Haverhill. I can't say whether the towers will look like this of what they're proposing, but this is an existing HVDC line that goes from the same place in Canada down to Massachusetts. So what do they need to do in order to have this pass? Well, first of all, they need a presidential permit, which is a thing that they, a federal permit they need in order to cross the international boundary with a power line. That's what the hearings were about the other couple of weeks ago. The Department of Energy, as part of the NEPA process, has to come out and hear what the public has to say about, and this is what it was about. Tell us what we should include in our environmental impact study. And their own regulations say it needs to include environmental, economic, and social impacts. And they got an earful. As I said to one of the DOE guys, I don't know how they feel about Northern Pass, but they sure went back to Washington knowing how New Hampshire felt about Northern Pass. As part of those hearings, there were more than 2,500 people. Did anybody here go to one of the hearings? Yeah, so a number of you. I went to 5 of them. I was astounded by the number of people who felt compelled to come out, the number of people who were not the kind of person who wanted to stand up in front of people and talk and tell their story. Over 2,500 people, over 300 spoke, 15 were in favor, and most of those were in Franklin. I was surprised in Franklin that of the 21 people from Franklin who spoke at the Franklin hearing, 9 were opposed and 12 were in favor. And most of those were from Town Hall. They were excited about the potential tax impact. One can understand that. Once the draft of the environmental impact study is, let me just back up a second. It's a presidential permit. The DOE comes up with what they are going to include in their environmental impact statement, and then they commission that. They hire somebody to study all these questions and come up with a report. And then in approximately a year's time, this time next year sometime perhaps, that's probably, again, aggressive, but that's the plan, they will have a draft EIS, and there will be another period of public comment. And people will say, well, but you didn't really study this well enough, and you studied it, but I think you're wrong, and you're exactly right, it won't matter at all, and whatever reaction we have to the EIS. From that, from those public comments, then the presidential permit would be either be granted or denied. But that's only one part of the process. In New Hampshire, and as Brian Mills of the DOE like to say, the Department of Energy has no authority to site any towers in New Hampshire. That's with the New Hampshire Site Evaluation Committee review. And that will get started once the draft EIS is out. And that's a nine-month process in which and New Hampshire had seen this recently with some of the wind projects, especially the big one up north, where they took in public input, considered it, and either issued a permit or don't. They also need an amendment to an existing USDA special use permit to expand right-of-way on 10 miles of White Mountain National Forest, which is why if you see the maps, the preferred corridor goes straight through the White Mountain National Forest, and if they don't get that, the alternate route is all the way around, which is what the folks up in Haverhill were upset about, because if they don't get the special use permit, and there's no guarantee that they would, they're going to have a lot more new corridor to go around the White Mountain National Forest. There's FERC review of the Transmission Services Agreement. In fact, that's already occurred, and they approved it. That's the agreement between Hydro-Quebec and Northeast Utilities. And then the New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission would review any purchase power agreement. So far, there's been no application. PS&H has not applied to the PUC asking to be permitted to buy some of this power. They may in the future. I suspect they might. So what are we doing? What's the Forest Society doing? Well, we're working with our traditional partners, the Appalachian Mountain Club, Conservation Law Foundation, Nature Conservancy, Amonoosuc Conservation Trust, which is up north, and regional planning commissions to ask some of these questions, pose some of these questions. Just the other day, you might have read the story about we sent a letter to the DOE asking them to rule on a couple of things. We asked them to first give the public a chance. Actually, first they said, the Forest Society didn't, but a number of organizations and people maintained that the presidential permit application is incomplete and said, look, DOE, you should look at the application and simply rule it incomplete. Tell them to go away and come back when they have a complete application. And the point was that the application is meant to show various alternatives, and the contention is that the application doesn't look at using existing lines, doesn't look at burying lines, doesn't look at the no action or no build option. The other thing that we asked in the letter was, look, once you figure out what you're going to include in the environmental impact statement, you ought to put that out for public comment. So why commission this study, this statement, for a year, only to find out that everybody really wanted to know one thing that you decided to leave out? You're just going to delay the process. And so we ask for some public comment on that, which is common in some other permitting processes. Forest Society is working with our members. We sent a mailing to, hopefully most of you got it, trying to tell people how we felt about it, why we felt the way we do, and giving some information about some of these processes and so forth, including some maps about where the line is going and so forth. What we found, and were surprised, we knew that Northern Pass was mailing as well, that many, many people were unaware. Many, many people pretty closely tied to the lines themselves were unaware. Many out-of-state landowners were unaware. So our mailing brought some more people out. Whether they liked the idea or didn't like the idea, they knew about it and hadn't been informed. And to a certain extent, we're trying to organize to have a voice, although I will say the great mass of opposition that you may have read about is not our doing. It just exists. and we're there kind of in the middle, waving our flag for the forest. We're advocating for a broad alternatives analysis by the DOE. What we are saying is, look, we are against the proposal that you've put forward. We're asking the DOE to look at other ways that this might be done. Let's say that there are some potential long-term benefits of using hydropower from Quebec in the New England market. How else can that be done? Why rely on 19th century technology? This really is a 19th century idea, to string lines on big towers across hundreds of miles. Look at the use of the existing HVDC line. Look at options for burial. Look at a no-build alternative. People think this just means us saying no. It isn't really. The idea is saying, all right, if you're going to investigate the environmental impact of something, you ought to investigate and quantify the environmental impact of not doing it. Right? So if we don't build this, does that mean that we're more reliant on fossil fuels? And what will the impact of that be? If we don't build this, will we not meet our energy needs? And what will the economic impact of that be? And if you compare the two, you ought to be able to quantify which is better economically, environmentally, no build or build. That's what we mean by asking them to look closely at the no-build option. We think it's a viable option. It's certainly a viable question. And apply some standard of preference for existing power line corridors to the northern 45 miles, saying, look, if you, the worst-case scenario is building new corridor where it's not needed or building new corridor with another alternative. Have some preference. Our goals, we're the state's oldest and largest land trust, and we're a forestry organization. So we are looking at this in needing to defend land already conserved, as I mentioned, defend scenic values in all impacted communities. We think our scenery is part of what makes New Hampshire, New Hampshire. We think it's important. We think it's what it's fighting for. It's not just a view. It should be minimized. People come here. They don't go to Jersey. Well, they go to Jersey Shore, okay. But they don't go see the power lines in New Jersey. We need to defend a strong forest products economy, include wood for energy. We think this will have a negative impact on the wood-burning power plants. And landowners need a good market for biomass. And the forest products industry needs that market as well. We need to defend forests from fragmentation and other degradation. If you're cutting 150 to 400 foot wide corridors through the forest permanently, that has some ill effects, and we want to fight against that when it's not necessary. And we want to defend the public benefits New Hampshire forests provide to New Hampshire people. You know, I also, when I'm talking to people look at a map and they see a big swath of unfragmented forest, and they go, well, what's all that? It's just sitting there. It's not doing anything. Well, it's doing a heck of a lot. And since you guys live in a rural community, I think you understand that. You understand that that's where our water comes from. That's where our wood comes from. That's where our wildlife exists. That's where our tourism comes from. It's doing a lot. And so we want to protect those benefits and make sure that those benefits are held up against any potential benefits of a power line project. So in reaction to the overwhelming public opposition to this, the Forest Society came out and said, you know what? We suggest to Hydro-Québec, and we sent out letters last week to Hydro-Québec and Northeast Utilities and NSTAR and copied Gary Long. By the way, I should say, I'm not sure that this is a PSNH deal. Others may disagree. This is a Northeast Utilities deal. PSNH is their New Hampshire subsidiary, so they're involved. But this is about Northeast Utilities. I'm not sure PSNH has a whole lot to say about it. But anyway, we said, look, it's clear that few, if anybody, really wants this as proposed. Go back to the drawing board. Reconsider. Build consensus. If there's really a need for hydropower to come from Canada to New England, go back to the drawing board and figure out how it can be done with support of the communities. We haven't heard back. I'm not sure we're going to, but anyway. So what's happening now? The DOE is still collecting public comment on the scope of the environmental impact statement. If you have comments on what they should include, especially if there's something specific to the town of Deerfield, if expanding the existing right-of-way or using the alternate route would impact some particularly important conservation element of town or historic resource, or be close to a school or anything like that. I don't know those details. You should ask the DOE to include an analysis of that in their economic impact statement. And you can do that through April 12th. In Concord, HB 648, which I referred to before, is relevant to eminent domain, passed the House 317 to 51. It doesn't mean it's law. It means it's maybe a third of the way to law, which is a long way. Away. What's interesting about the 317 to 51 vote, though, is that that's not North Country. That's everywhere. I think Coos County has 11 representatives. Grafton County has 26. And in order to get to 317, you've got to be all over the state. So there's a real strong property rights issue here. Whether or not you think it's a good idea to bring power down, having a private company have the access to eminent domain strikes at the cord, at the heart of what some values that I think New Hampshire people hold dear. And that's what this bill is meant to address. It's tricky because the bill amends RSA 371-1, which limits the power of public utilities to use eminent domain for the siting of power plants. Well, that's kind of easy because a utility can go try to find and buy one property from a willing seller for a power plant. So if the guy here doesn't want to sell, they look around like any business would for another site they might buy and build their power plant. And it prohibits them from using eminent domain. Transmission lines are much trickier because one could argue that it would be hard to build any transmission line across 44 communities without the use of eminent domain. Somewhere along the line, somebody's going to say no. In this case, what they've tried to do is say that utilities cannot use eminent domain to build a transmission line unless it is needed for system reliability. That unless we have this power, that the system, the New England grid system would be in danger of not having enough power at some point. And so it raises a bar a little bit. There's concern on people who are opposed to this that this would unnecessarily restrict any power line at all. Northern Pass is saying, well, that means no one will be able to update the Coos loop, which is important to the North Country for some of the energy projects up there. I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's the argument that's going on right now. What you can do, you can go right on the DOE website and file your comments through April 12th if you want. This is a shot of one of the public hearings, the one in Haverhill, actually. That's Tom Thompson up there speaking. He was the one that sort of threw down the gauntlet and being of political sort after his father, that this issue will be a litmus test for anyone looking to get elected over the next several years. I don't know whether that's true or not, but I think every presidential candidate who steps foot in New Hampshire is going to be asked about it. You can also write the governor. Many people have been writing the governor. The governor initially last fall came out and appeared at the press conference with Northern Pass in Franklin and said, what a great idea. Jobs. We need jobs. It's terrific. I think it's significant that he said that prior to Election Day in November. After Election Day, in face of all the opposition, he's been backing up a little, saying, well, you know, the project shouldn't go forward unless the communities are in favor of it. And he's been trying to encourage PSNH to do a better job communicating the benefits to those communities. However you feel, write him. Tell him. Communicate your opinion about HB 648 to your state senator. Tell him what you think. Is it a good idea or a bad idea? I won't tell you what to say, but I would encourage you to communicate with him. There's any other places you can go for more information. We have a web page that has a lot of links and information. There's a blog that updates folks on things that are going on. Northern Pass US is the Northern Pass website. It's a good website. They've done a good job. They've got lots of information. If you're interested in this and you want to hear the other side, you should go there. They have a journal that gives their side of the updates, how they feel about things. By all means, go read, find out. And then the Northern Pass EIS.us is the DOE site. That took a lot of work, that sign. We've seen a lot of pictures, a lot of signs, up north especially. That one took a lot of work. And I'll end with this, the latest recruit. This is up from up at John Amy's farm. I don't know. That calf may have not been asked whether or not he was really against Northern Pass. Anyway, so that's my presentation. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer questions about things I know or refer to other people where you might find answers that I don't know.